Welcome to the Packet Pushers Weekly. Today, we're going to jump right into a data center design discussion with Juniper Networks. I am Ethan Banks, and with me is Greg Farrow. You can follow us on Twitter at EC Banks and at Ethereal Mind. And of course, you can follow the show at Packet Pushers or by visiting packetpushers.net. Joining us for our discussion of data center switching infrastructure are Doug Hanks and Salman Zahid, directors of product management at Juniper, who has sponsored Packet Pushers today. And gentlemen, welcome to the show. Doug, would you introduce yourself to the Packet Pushers audience?
Yeah, thanks, Ethan. Yeah, so my name is Doug Hanks, director of architecture, and I've been spending a lot of my time lately helping a lot of our large customers solve some of their most difficult problems in the data center.
Very good. And Salman, would you as well introduce yourself to the Packet Pushers audience?
Thank you, guys. My name is Salman Zahid. I'm responsible for the product management of ASICs in Juniper, as well as I work with some of the large service provider customers.
Okay, very good. So the discussion today is we spent the last 15 or 20 minutes on the call together, kind of planning how we were going to put this show together. What we decided, folks, is we're going to do a show kind of in three parts here, really looking at three use cases across the Juniper switching line and how different pieces and parts within the Juniper switching line apply to each of these use cases. And a lot of this conversation will revolve around the new QFX 10,000 switch, which we've mentioned on the show before, and maybe you've read a bit about it, but it is a spine layer switch as its primary use case. And we'll be talking about that in more detail as we go. As we get into this data center infrastructure discussion, let's frame it around enterprise customers, first of all, IT as a service in that context. Now, you guys at Juniper identified this as a use case for your data center portfolio with your customers. So kind of let's set up what that is and then dive into what that actually looks like if I'm building out such a service with Juniper products.
Thanks, guys. So as you pointed out, Ethan, we view our product line as solving certain data center problems, IT as a service being one problem, in a sense that obviously as you look into what's happening with enterprise customers, they want to be able to get to the cloud economics. They want to be able to get to the point where they are offering IT as a service from the cloud. So, you know, it has to be fully automated, self-serving data center that's multi-tenant across lines of businesses. So what we are doing with our product set is it allows you to build smaller to larger data centers where 10K comes into play is basically 10K becomes sort of the spine switch, or if you have multiple pods, 10K can also work as a core switch connecting multiple pods. And then we have a layer of software working with either VMware NSX or Contrail Cloud software that allows people to build those IT as a service type of environments.
Right out of the gate, we're talking about IT as a service, which if we're enterprise customers, we're not. I mean, that's sort of a newish sort of a term that's going out there, and you kind of highlighted how you defined that. To me, when we're talking about IT as a service and an IT organization offering those things as a service, traditionally an enterprise would go to IT and say, hey, we need email. And then, you know, they roll out Microsoft Exchange or they roll out, you know, whatever they roll out for some sort of an email service. Oh, we need financials. And then, you know, IT goes to work and they build all this stuff in the background. And hey, now you've got a web browser that can connect you to this system that lets you do financials. When you're talking about IT as a service, it's not really what we're talking about. We're talking about more like we're providing an interface to IT resources that then some consumer can decide, this is what I need to do this thing that I need to accomplish for the business, and getting things spun up, as you put it, in an automated way. Is that about right?
Ethan, that's exactly right. I mean, the thing is, you're absolutely right. IT as a service, you know, at the end of the day, you're basically spinning up some new application. And traditionally, how IT departments have done it is basically they often build these purpose-built pods or purpose-built infrastructures for different applications or different lines of businesses, or even if they are doing some kind of sharing on that infrastructure, it's pretty complex and manual way to do those things. And what we are saying is basically that, you know, as people go into this model of building truly multi-tenant service-oriented infrastructure where not only you can house number of applications, tenants, lines of businesses, and just being able to allow them to provision those services in a much more automated fashion. So one interface of that is how you consume those services through self-service portals and all of that. But really what we are doing is we are helping the IT organizations to build those infrastructures structures in a much more automated fashion in a much more quicker way through automation and through cloud software. Because, see, at the end of the day, even the lines of businesses or the consumers of IT have a choice. They can go to public cloud services and have their applications be deployed there. So IT organizations have to respond and build infrastructures that not only provide cloud economics, but they provide the same level of agility as public clouds do.
Okay, so that's great context for what we're trying to build here with all the Juniper pieces and parts that can help us to do that. And then as you were talking through that just a bit earlier, you mentioned QFX 10,000 switch, you mentioned Contrail, you mentioned, you know, a bunch of different things. So let's lay the infrastructure here. If I'm trying to build an infrastructure that I can have be automated, you know, the base layer looks like what? Let's talk about, you know, physical switching infrastructure here to start out with.
The first piece is the integration, and it's very important that you want to be able to integrate with VMware NSX. You want to integrate with Juniper Contrail from the software and the virtual networking side. But it's also important that we want to integrate with the orchestration side, so we can do so with the QFX 10,000 as well as the QFX 5000 series with OpenStack and CloudStack, and basically create this ecosystem where we interoperate with all the major cloud providers. So basically, when it comes to the networking side, the QFX 10K basically enables you to have a ton of features when it comes to MPLS, VXLAN routing, a lot of scale if you need that. And we extend that down to our 5K as well through a technology called Fusion. So we basically make this a very easy-to-use Ethernet fabric when it comes to building out IT as a service. Full integration and very easy to use.
So keyword there, Ethernet fabric. So for customers who are looking at building a data center LAN, we used to call them data center networks, really they're now Ethernet fabrics, where we're trying to build a high-speed, lossless Ethernet backbone today, because in 5 years' time, it won't be lossless because things will change. But, you know, is that really, it's really about that, you know, idea of a any-to-any fabric in the data center.
That's right. So whether you want multicast layer 2, layer 3, or MPLS, you want that at any point in your network, and you don't want to compromise on different bits or engineering trade-offs. So one of the fundamental design changes with the QFX 10K is that we want to give you any type of service anywhere in your network at scale.
Right. So the point is that, you know, you've got a data center, you need a lot of Ethernet, you need to be able to connect it all together at high speed, low latency, but with all the features. That's fundamentally what we're talking about today.
Yes.
And we're also talking about the integration element of it. So yes, we've got this hardware with all of this capability, the ability to do different kinds of encapsulation, et cetera. But I think the magic that we're getting to here is network engineer not having to go in and provision all this stuff and touch all these switches by hand. You want, let's say, OpenStack, if that's your orchestration platform, to tell the Ethernet fabric, this is what I need to happen to fulfill some goal, some policy, and just have it work. And there's integrations there, and as you mentioned, NSX and Contrail that are taking us there, yes?
That's exactly right. So, I mean, think about it. When you're using software-defined networking controllers like NSX or Contrail, they are obviously provisioning your data center. But in any enterprise network, Ethan and Greg, you will have a combination of virtualized resources as well as bare metal servers or appliances. Where Juniper data center infrastructure can help is basically seamlessly providing connectivity between virtualized resources that are managed through either like a Contrail vRouter or an NSX vSwitch to bare metal servers and bare metal appliance and resources by terminating the other end of the overlays on the Juniper infrastructure. Now, on the Juniper QFX 5100 switches, you get the L2 connectivity services for overlays like VXLAN, where 10K can help is basically it can provide not only layer 2 overlay services, but layer 3 overlay services as well.
So by layer 2 versus layer 3 overlay services, what distinction are we making? I mean, VXLAN is a layer 3 encapsulation. It's IP over UDP, but the challenge on a lot of chipsets has come in routing between VXLAN segments. Is this what we're talking about?
That's exactly what we are talking about, Ethan, in a sense that basically QFX 10,000 can not only just bridge VXLAN to VLAN, but it can also allow customers to route between VXLANs. Obviously, you could have a tenant inside a VRF, and you could have a few VNIs or VXLANs for a given tenant. And obviously, you want to make sure that they can actually talk to each other, regardless of whether they are coming off of a virtualized server or coming off of a bare metal server. Obviously, when you're coming off of a virtualized server, your vSwitch or vRouters can take care of routing between segments and whatever have you, because they are doing it on an x86 device. But when you are coming off of a bare metal server, then you have to have some kind of a network element that can help you do some of those things. And that's where QFX 10,000 comes into play. And that's just sort of one example of, you know, when we're talking specifically in the context of private cloud with NSX or Contrail. So that's just one example of what QFX 10,000 can do. I mean, it's really just to emphasize, you know, obviously, we have a very strong portfolio with QFX 5100, where 10K is doing is basically it's complementing some of the capabilities that didn't exist on the 5100.
So actually, this is interesting, because I was at some kind of a summit event that you guys had in March, and the QFX 10,000 was announced. And the way it was positioned there in my mind was, it's a spine switch, and that's really what I want this for, which I guess would be the primary use case. But kind of what you implied there is there's other use cases for the 10K as well, and things that it could be doing at the access layer, maybe as in the role of a Tor.
Oh, sure. I mean, you know, in fact, what's interesting is, you know, a switch is a switch is a switch, right?
Yeah.
And even though, you know, typically a 10K would be, you know, you would not sort of consider such a big device as a top-of-rack switch typically, but there is a reason we have multiple form factors. You know, we have something which is a 36-port, 40-gig device all the way to almost 500 ports of 100-gig. So we have smaller form factors just for those reasons, where basically you may need services at the edge of the network, you know, either VXLAN routing or something else if you're using, let's say, doing MPLS-based overlays or something else. And then there are other design choices you can make that where you can have a simpler top-of-rack switch and do something more complex at the spine or core layer. That's generally not desirable, but people do it. So, you know, think of that as, you know, it can offset or complement some of those capabilities that may not be available due to ASIC limitations or whatever have you at the edge of the network. But yes, it can also be used as a top of rack in a smaller form factor, which is a 36-port device.
Okay. Now, there's another term here that's kind of, I think, a new Juniper term called a fusion that factors into all this. Can you talk about what fusion is? And then I think maybe we can kind of pull this whole thing together.
Totally. So fusion, we have to be aware of the fact that, you know, fusion has a very specific use case. You know, when you look at your traditional data centers, right, people have top of rack switches, and they have aggregation switches. Typically, people have managed those set of devices and layers separately. And, you know, if you talk to any of the CIOs or customers, they'll tell you that, you know, hey, you know, we are, you know, starting to look at this, you know, cloud economics. People are talking about how it's going to help us reduce our OPEX or bring simplicity into the management of data center. But we are really not quite there from either the application point of view or the skill set point of view. What can you do to help us sort of bridge that gap where we are still sort of running our data center in a more traditional manner, but can help bring the simplicity to that data center? So what Fusion allows you to do is basically you have set of top of racks, which is, let's say, 64 or so, and you have a pair of aggregation devices, in this case, let's say QFX 10K, and what it allows you to manage that entire data center or that one pod from one point of management. So you don't really have to think about doing monitoring, statistics, image management, or config management on your access layer. So it really helps customers from that OPEX point of view, where basically to manage a 64-rack data center, they are really having to just configure one device instead of 64 devices individually.
That sounds like what Cisco has with their Fabric Extender product in the Nexus line, but a Fabric Extender is actually a dumb device. You literally can't do anything with it, and all switching goes back through a central device. Fusion sounds distinct from that.
Indeed, it is. So yes, you get some of the same benefits that, let's say, Cisco has offered with the Fabric Extender, but where Fusion sets itself apart is in two respects. One is, obviously, we use our standard EX4300 or QFX5100 switches as the top-of-rack switches. So these are not sort of dumb devices. These are full-blown switches. So not only can you get management simplicity benefit out of this solution, but they also do local switching. So you're not really losing any intelligence of a switching Ethernet fabric. So, and you get more optimized traffic workflow. Naturally, even within a single rack that are connected through a top of rack switch, you could have, you know, traffic that is moving inside that rack and doesn't need to go to the other racks in the data center. You know, with some of our competitors, even for that particular traffic, you would have to come through the aggregation device back down. Mm-hmm. Whereas with the Fusion solution, it would be device local. So you get the benefit of not having to use those uplinks for that local traffic.
And one thing I wanted to point out was on the extender piece that you mentioned, is that, yeah, generally that is a very dumb device. However, with Fusion, it's a little bit different approach. We reuse our existing hardware to provide the same functionality. So you can take your existing QFX5100 and use that as part of the Fusion architecture. So it basically becomes your top-of-rack switch, just running a different software image. There's no need to buy additional hardware. Just reuse what you already have.
Okay, so now we've got a lot of pieces and parts here that we can use to build my enterprise data center Ethernet fabric. I've got a QFX10000 that could be top-of-rack, or a spine would be the, I think, the primary use case, is still fair to say. QFX5100s that also on top of rack. I can manage some of this with Fusion if I like. So single point of management that lets me look at my data center from one single place and manage it in that way without having to manage individual devices. I've got integration components where I can call on this fabric from an SDN controller like NSX from VMware or Juniper Contrail, or have an orchestration system like OpenStack manage some elements of this for me, which takes me to a point of having automated this thing that I've put together, helps me deliver IT as a service. One other keyword that I think is part of this, and an element we haven't talked about, is integrating other clouds into this little private cloud that I've built. And that, I believe, is your metafabric. Is that the right term?
So there are two components to that, obviously, Ethan and Greg. One is, obviously, you know, you can connect other data centers, your own data centers, to this private cloud or to this data center pod. One of the big key benefit of a device like QFX10000 is that it can offer you multiple choices in terms of how you connect those different data centers. Obviously, people have done it using things like L3VPN or MPLS backbones, which QFX10000 does provide. So this is really where the benefits start to become very clear, that, you know, not only the benefit is restricted to one pod or one data center, but when you start to look at data centers as a pool of resources, just as you look at your compute, storage, or networking as a pool of resources, and go one step further and look at all of your data centers as a pooled resource, and being able to provide simplicity and application mobility across multiple data centers, you have a number of choices and technologies in how you can interconnect those data centers. So the choices that we offer there are things like L3VPN or EVPN, where basically, EVPN can, you know, obviously allow you to do some layer two application mobility across data centers as well. So this is sort of where the benefit starts to become very, very clear, that not only can we provide this way to interconnect your storage and compute inside a pod or inside a data center, but provide you connectivity across multiple data centers, including any kind of connectivity choices that customers have, you know, existing, you know, people may have MPLS backbone, so they can continue to use that. Or if they're building new, that they can build standards-based Ethernet VPN connectivity options as well.
Okay, so you had mentioned the ability to do layer 2 extension using EVPN. or layer two mobility is the way you phrased it, using EVPN. Again, going back to the Cisco comparison, you know, they've made a lot of noise about OTV, similar kind of technology.
So think of EVPN as a more scalable and standards-based technology to interconnect data centers over layer two. I mean, if you look at EVPN standard, Cisco, Juniper, Alcatel, and others have worked together for a number of years, even though Juniper was, sort of front and center in driving the EVPN standard. Now it really has come together after a few years. So, OTV was sort of a more pre-standard, it's more proprietary technology. In EVPN does the same thing in a more scalable manner and allows you to connect a lot of data centers. Obviously, as you know, underlying technology in EVPN is BGP, so it's much more scalable. And, what's even more interesting is the data plane agnostic, so it can work on top of IP or MPLS for that matter.
And we've covered EVPN on the show a couple of different times. I think we had a show in the past with Russ White where we talked about it from an IETF draft standpoint and some of the work that was being done there. Then it came up in a show that we did with Cisco, actually, in the context you just described, where some of the things they're doing with EVPN and BGP. So if you're listening to this and want to know more about EVPN, just dig through the archives and there's some shows there for you. Okay, so if an enterprise is approaching Juniper and then wants to take all these pieces and parts and put them together, is there a strategy, an approach? I mean, how do you go about recommending to this customer what they need from the Juniper portfolio to meet their needs?
Our approach is very simple, is in a sense that we want to solve a broad array of enterprise use cases. We can help customers simplify their data centers with technologies like Fusion. Obviously, customers also have an ability to build leaf spine networks should they choose to go that route. Some enterprises seem to not be ready to go there yet, but that option obviously exists. So fundamentally, for enterprise customers, there are really two options: how they build their data centers. They can build it in a leaf spine IP fabric configuration and any kind of orchestration system to provide IT services, or they can use solutions like Junos Fusion to really simplify their data center but keep the existing operational model of how they run data centers today. And then once you have built those pods in either leaf spine configuration or Junos Fusion, they have an ability to interconnect multiple pods or multiple data centers using rich interconnect technologies like L3 VPN or EVPN at both layer two or layer three.
So when they've got that built, I think the interesting question for me comes in with automation. Does Juniper get involved with a customer who's trying to automate this fabric with some higher level service? Again, you've mentioned integrations with Contrail, NSX, and OpenStack. We've talked about those. Is the customer, we'll say on their own exactly, but I mean, are they going to build that themselves or is Juniper get engaged?
So we mentioned the orchestration around NSX and Contrail. So that aside, the other pieces specifically around OpenStack or CloudStack, and we talked a little bit about that as well. So we have full integration in terms of configuration management, element management, and those type of tools as well. As you kind of go deeper down the automation rat hole, you could basically say, we also do automation in terms of your typical netconf and yank. So if you want to make configuration changes directly to a single switch, or if you want to use tools such as Chef and Puppet to do changes to multiple switches, you can do so as well through those types of tools. And obviously, if you're a really keen developer, you love Python or what have you, we have both APIs or the ability to run these programs directly on the switch itself and make control plane or data plane type changes as well. So we really have the entire spectrum when it comes to automation, very high level orchestration or very low level of changing bits and registers with APIs.
Bits and registers. Yeah.
And one point I want to make that, yes, so we are sort of obviously in the business of delivering the network, right? And then integrating it with, sort of a higher layers of software such as NSX or Contrail, even higher level of automation or application delivery services, so to speak. We're not in that business. But, when it comes to automating the network, we have obviously a number of different choices there. Now, two points I do want to make sure that we get through is that I really look at things like Fusion as a sort of a zero-touch provisioning capability or a zero-touch management capability for an enterprise pods or enterprise data centers. Obviously, if you're looking at leaf spine IP fabric and using some kind of an overlay to provide layer two services on top of that for your IT constituents, we have open source tools like OpenClaws that can not only help you provision, but monitor and manage those environments. And last but not the least, we have, obviously, I'm not sure if your audience is familiar with that, is something called Juno Space and Network Director. That's a very comprehensive network management platform that can help you manage all the networking bits from Juniper that includes switches, routers, firewalls, and everything else. So really, from the network management and automation pieces, obviously, you have Fusion, which is zero-touch deployment, zero-touch management type of capabilities. You have OpenClaws, and you have the standard network director. And obviously, there are lots of other ways. You know, just as no one customer, no two customers build their network the same way, they have some nuances. There is also some preference in how you consume that infrastructure. And Doug touched on some of those capabilities, like, you know, being able to use Chef, Puppet, Python, and others. All of those capabilities exist as well. So it just boils down to what your choice is in terms of how you consume these services and how you build these infrastructures, but the choices are available. For enterprise customers, typically, they would gravitate towards using things like Network Director and Juno Space combination.
Juniper's not going to walk in and build automated processes with whatever else you're running inside of your environment, but all the tools are there that Juniper provides and supports to make that happen, whatever your choice might be. And that's one of those things that you guys don't brag about it enough, because it's all the tools and the APIs and so on. You've been doing it for so long within Juniper. I think sometimes Juniper forgets that it's there in a sense, because everyone else, it's new and it's exciting for them. And so they get all excited about their APIs, however good or bad they may be doing it. Juniper's been doing it for so long.
Yeah. Funny thing is, you know, this whole API business is such a fashion now, but Juniper has done it since day one, because of the fact that, you know, that's just how service providers did it, right? They did it services definition. They didn't really care so much about the bits and bytes of the network. They cared about the services definition, and all of that was done through APIs, and Juniper's was right there front and center 15 years ago, and we're still doing it. And I mean, it's just in fashion now. Yeah. But we have been there all along.
Yeah. Okay, so we just did a big use case talking about enterprise customers and how we would build a fabric that they could use to deliver IT as a service. In other words, their customers coming to them and in an automated way being able to consume resources from that data center. And the networking element of that being all taken care of, riding on Juniper infrastructure and the pieces and parts that are there. Okay, let's move from that use case into another one that's going to give us an excuse to talk a bit about this fancy new QFX 10,000 you guys have built. That use case is content providers or people that are doing, you know, very large amounts of hosting. So in that world, and again, I see the QFX 10,000 is going to fit into this here. What challenges are you guys hearing from that world?
So a lot of the challenges with regards to hosting mainly revolves around scale, specifically around the physical size of the network, because they tend to grow to tens of thousands or even hundreds of thousands of servers, as well as the logical scale in terms of the number of routes, VRFs, tenant separation, and things like that. So it's actually challenging to build that out, specifically when you're taking a look at bare metal services as well. So whether you have a virtualized workload or a physical workload, you want the same architecture and functionality from the network. And one of the challenges is, again, around the scale. So we designed the QFX 10,000 specifically to solve these high scale challenges. A few bullet points is that it's a very high logical scale in terms of the number of routes that it supports, but also the number of tenants. And we support tenants in a number of different ways. So we can do tenant separation through VRFs, and basically each tenant gets its own layer two and layer three boundaries. So you can switch and route in the context of a VRF. So we have layer two and layer three VRFs. And we can basically leak between tenants as well, and then go back out to the cloud, whether it's the internet or a MPLS core backbone. The second challenge was around the feature set that cloud providers want. They want basically any encapsulation to any other encapsulation, which is really tough to do when you're taking a look at your typical top of rack switch. But because you want to go from Ethernet to IP, you want to go to MPLS to IP. And some of the more exotic encapsulations is VXLAN to VXLAN, which is called VXLAN routing, or VXLAN to MPLS. So I would summarize that as scale and functionality when it comes to the QFX10K for service providers.
In that context, from a silicon perspective, you're talking about having to rip off some amount of headers and replace them with some other kind of headers and having, you know, a translation matrix that's there so you know what's going from what and to what as that packet passes through the silicon.
Yeah, it's really challenging because, as you mentioned, you have to rip off certain headers and you got to keep track of tenant information and basically replace that in a new header and still inject that same tenant information. So it may be a particular label and transport that to a particular VXLAN ID so that that tenant separation stays true from going from the backbone into the inside of your network. And we basically had to create new silicon to do this because when you take a look at what's available today in the market, we can't do that with your typical Broadcom chipset. So we had to actually go back in-house and do it ourselves.
And that's the Q5.
Yes, this is the Juniper Q5 silicon.
So the Q5 ASIC, how did it get its name? I know I read something that you had written. Q5, if I remember right, Doug, I think you put it Q for QFXs, and that's the product line, and then 500 gigabit full duplex throughput through each one, so full, so Q5?
Yeah, that's it, Q5.
Okay, so it's an ASIC that's got a lot of oomph to it, and if I'm trying to map a particular Q5 ASIC into a QFX 10,000 front panel, let's say, my understanding is a single QFX chip could handle 400 gig ports or 1240s or 4810s.
Right, so it's basically a building block when you build a switch, and when you take a look at some of our smaller QFX 10,000 switches, so for example, the 36Q or the 72Q, they'll have a different number of these ASICs depending on the port density. So you can kind of do the math. So you take a look at our 72-port switch, you'll have 6 front-facing ASICs to meet that particular port density. So it's a multi-chip system by definition.
And you just allocate however many Q5 ASICs within the system you need to handle the number of front panel ports that you've got on that particular build, whichever one it is.
Exactly. And the big benefit is when you build a system like this, you actually get away from these pesky engineering trade-offs of features and scale. So what happens is even on the smallest QFX 10,000 switch, you get the complete functionality in terms of VXLAN routing, MPLS, and all these great features. And you also get all of the high scale when it comes to logical scale, routes, VRF, multicast groups, things like that, all the way to the largest QFX switch. So we don't make any compromise on the buffer, the scale, or the features between these switching products. It's based on the same silicon.
Just one little side note here I wanted to throw in because I'd written it down. I thought it was interesting. PHYless design?
Yeah, so there is no PHYs in our line cards or our 2RU smaller switches. And this basically reduces the amount of power that the switch consumes overall. And it also reduces the latency. Because generally what happens is when you build a custom ASIC to do all these fancy things, generally the latency increases. So we've took every step possible to reduce the latency. So it acts and behaves in terms of latency, just like every other switch in the market. But you get all the buffer, the scale, and the functionality.
Yeah, the PHY would normally sit in front of that ASIC and handle some of the translation of physical Ethernet to logical link layer and then hand it off to the ASIC. In this design, we don't have to worry about that at all and gain those power and latency benefits.
Exactly.
One of the things that I wanted to kind of point out was, you know, we talked about scale. So, you know, when I look at scale, for example, I look at scale in two dimensions, right? Obviously, there's a physical scale. You know, if you look at the QFX 10,000 series, we have everything from 36-port box to 500-port box. And, you know, if you look at the 40-gig scale, you can go as much as 576 ports of 40 gig. If you look at 100 gig, you can go as much as 480 ports of 100 gig. So you have to ask that question, you know, who needs this kind of scale, right? So, you know, in the context of the hosting or the cloud providers where, you know, Doug was talking about tens of thousands of servers. So as these customers today move from sort of 1 gig server scale to 10 gig server scale, there's a need to do an aggregation of all of those servers at 40 gig. And that's sort of where QFX 10,000 comes into play at very high scale 40 gig aggregation. And Ethan and Greg, as you know, there's also a move or shift in the industry to go towards 25 gig for the server access. And as that shift happens, naturally there's a need for very high scale 100 gig aggregation. And that's really the other place where QFX 10,000 shines, because it provides the industry's highest 100 gig scale.
This is where right. the fireless design becomes a feature, because you don't have the fire welded to the board. You can transition from 10 to 25 to 40 to 50 to 100 gig as needed.
Correct. Another thing is, so that's the physical scale aspect, that you can scale from 36 ports all the way to 500 ports at 40 gig or 100 gig. And the second dimension is the logical scale, which Doug was referring to in terms of, you know, just the segment scale, in terms of VXLAN segments or VRFs and things like that. And yes, there is a, you know, desire to move that scale into an x86 server, either on vRouters or vSwitches normally. But I can tell you there are lots of customers, obviously, particularly hosting customers, where often the tenant state is exposed to the network. They're using VRF segmentation in the physical network to do that. And that's where, you know, you look at some of the existing building blocks today available in the market, and, you know, they are pretty constrained in terms of those types of scale. And that's really the other place where 10K shines a lot.
Yeah, I was going to call that design scale, which is the third dimension I kind of think of, which is, so I'm just going to go somewhere and just tell me, right? If you buy white box switches today, what you do is you lose a lot of design choices in the physical network itself. And there's a trade-off that you make. Now, this switch, not only does it do layer 2 and layer 3 with all the traditional protocols that you know, it also does multi-chassis lag. It also does 802.1BR style extension.
Which is what we call fusion, yeah.
Which is what we call fusion, which is what Cisco calls...
Fabric extension.
Fabric extensions, right? Yeah. So 802.1BR is a standard that came out of the IEEE 6 or 7 years ago. Cisco implemented it as fabric extenders. Juniper's doing it with fusion, which is great. So you get your multi-chassis lag, and then you get the fusion concepts there. So you get that flexibility if that's what makes sense for you to get 1 gig ports or whatever. You've still got MPLS. You've got the L2 VPN using BGP VPN or any of the MPLS features, and you get the VXLAN and all the overlay protocols. So from a design point of view, buying this switch, you don't get locked out of any future choices. You get to make all the choices. Whereas if you're off buying some of the other QFX products, say like the QFX 1000 or so forth, a lot of choices are taken away. They're things that you can never choose to have later. Is that a fair point?
Yeah, totally. I mean, you look at, for example, white box switching, right? Typical design would be, you know, you build your leaf spine fabric and you try to really fundamentally use network as no more than a transport, because, you know, you're relying on, you know, intelligence to be elsewhere, and you want the network to be a transport network. And while that's all good, you know, when you talk to like the real world problems, what you find out is that, you know, a lot of these customers are in transition, and generally their kind of approach works well in the greenfield deployments or smaller pods and stuff like that. But there are a ton of requirements where basically, you know, where a traditional enterprise customer would look at, you know, hey, I still need a lot of enterprise friendly features, you know, things like MCLAG or Fusion, for example. Obviously, I have a need to interconnect all of these data centers, so I need EVPN or L3 VPN. You know, you're not going to get those capabilities on white box switches. And you know, Juniper is not fundamentally against white box switching or anything like that. You know, obviously, if you look at our QFX 5100, it's based on merchant silicon. We invest heavily in merchant silicon system. We want to obviously give that cost benefits back to our customers. But, you know, the point really is that, you know, when you look at 10K, you need to really look at in the context of, you know, 5100 and 10K. And what we want to do is we want to give our customers a set of building blocks that can solve a wide variety of problems in a comprehensive manner. It's a set of platforms that you can use to build multitude of different design choices, you know, whether it's your very traditional enterprise data centers or very, very large data centers.
Yeah, I guess that's my point, is that you don't lacking choices. In some ways, you've got too many possible choices and you'll end up spending a lot of time researching all the different options and choosing. But you're saying to me the key factor here, or the key use case here of having all these features, is you've got a data center over there today and you're using MPLS to do IPVPNs to do tenant isolation. You could have a new data center built around the QFX 10,000, which uses EVPN, for example, and you've got a methodology to build the multi-tenancy architectures together.
Right. So when you take a look at our data center strategy, it's very simple. So it doesn't matter if you're enterprise, a service provider, or a web company. It's going to be the QFX 10,000 in the spine and the QFX 5,000 as the leaf. And generally for enterprise, we're going to lead and recommend that you use Fusion because it's going to be plug and play. It integrates nicely with all the open source tools as well as NSX. When it comes to the hosting providers, we're going to recommend our EVPN VXLAN fabric for all the tenant separation, the high scale. And then for the web or the SaaS companies, we have our IP fabric tools along with OpenCloth. So obviously, if those recommendations don't work, we can have the choice to go left or right. So it's a pretty consistent and easy message when it comes to the data center and where Juniper fits in.
Mm. Let's talk a bit about this scale in some more detail, because there's another aspect of this, the QFX 10,000, we haven't talked about yet, which is memory. And so I think a good way to introduce how you guys are dealing with memory and some of the new technology that's there is by mentioning you can do a million MAC addresses on a QFX 10,000, 2 million host routes. And those host route entries don't steal from the regular routing table entries. And speaking of which, you've got 256,000 IPv4 and IPv6 routes. So you've got a lot of memory, which in the past you had a constraint dealing with going between your ASIC and the memory bus being the bottleneck. You guys have built something else with the memory architecture to overcome that and allow decent performance with these sorts of really big numbers inside the QFX 10,000. And let me get this word right. It is hybrid memory cube, correct?
It's a different storage technology. The traditional storage technology you may be familiar with is a TCAM. Been using those for a long time now. But when it comes to basically going beyond the storage capacity of a TCAM and into getting this large scale, you have to use a different memory platform. So we decide on a hybrid memory cube. And this is basically just a decision around capacity, number one, as well as speed, because the primary goal is when you do a lookup at TCAM, for example, it has to be very quick to resolve your next hop. And if we try to get the same scale using TCAM, it'd be way too cost prohibitive, number one, to get that large scale. And number two, it would use up too much space on the line card. So we wouldn't even have room for it.
Yep.
So we got to make a compromise. So the Hybrid Memory Cube, or HMC, it's a very small footprint of memory. It's stacked vertically. That's why they call it 3D. But anyway, we basically use a internal algorithm called a Bloom filter to accomplish exactly the same thing as a TCAM. And we're able to use a large number of hash entries into the HMC memory and use a Bloom filter to look up these hashes as well. In summary, whether you're doing routes, MACs, or even packet buffering, actually, it uses the same HMC memory as opposed to a TCAM.
And so you're getting costs down and scale up and coming up with equivalent performance. Yeah, TCAM is the one thing we hear about. It always seems to be a limited resource, which is just because of its expense. And then, as you mentioned, just the physical space required to access that much memory is impractical when we're talking about this sort of scale.
So one of the things that, yes, indeed right. So, you know, this is a QFX 10K is a fundamentally what we call as an external memory system. And one of the constraints of external memory systems is you're going to be gated by the bandwidth of the memory itself, because we use that memory to obviously buffer the packets in the system. Plus, we also use that memory to provide extension to some of the tables that would otherwise won't be very large. You know, some of the scales you mentioned, Ethan, around, you know, 2 million host scales and 1 million MAC scale, you know, we use that this external external memory to hold some of those tables. So just to be able to make sure that we have the ability to provide 500 full duplex bandwidth capability while storing packets on this external memory and being able to do all of these lookups at the same time. That's really what the innovative piece on the 10K is, that, you know, typically in the past, what would happen is, you know, we simply were not able to scale to that 500 gig full duplex, performance while using external memories, because external memories would literally gate you to about 200 gig to 240 gig type of scale. The breakthrough here is to basically be able to break that bandwidth barrier between the ASIC and the memory. You know, the flip side of that is when you look at some of these other systems like SOC systems, or what we call them as switches on chip, where you get a ton of I/O, but you don't have a ton of memory. And reason SOCs don't have ton of memory because these are not external memory systems. So as a result, all the memory is resident on the ASIC itself and you have very little of it. So you're not going to have, you know, million MACs or million routes and things like that. Right. So you have to use external memory systems. And over there, our barrier was that the bandwidth was the gating factor. And with HMC, we've been able to break through that barrier.
On a silicon system on a chip, like a, you know, Broadcom chip, there's just not that much space on the actual chip itself to hold huge TCAM tables or huge memory chips.
The benefit of those systems is you get a ton of I.O. I mean, if you look at Trident 2, Trident 2 can give you a ton of I.O. It can give you about 1280 gig of bandwidth, actually. So yeah. It has a lot of bandwidth, but, you know, the compromise or, you know, you always have to make trade-offs, right? I mean, nothing in life is without a trade-off, right? So you get a lot of I.O., but you have to make sure that you have to design your network in such a way that, you know, you don't need a ton of scale because you're going to have limited ACL scale, limited route scale and stuff like that.
You're going to end up with a big leaf spine architecture and hundreds of switches to manage.
That's exactly right. And with 10K, what we were trying to do is, you know, what can we do that's going to really give you best of both worlds? It's going to give you a ton of I/O, which obviously it does. As you can see, at a system level, you can go as much as 500 ports of 100 gig. And while not compromising all of the other scales, you know, whether it's WRF scale or route scale or MAC scale or whatever have you. So really, it sort of brings the best of both worlds, where basically it gives you a ton of I/O scale while not compromising on any of the table sizes.
We've been talking about all of this detail about the QFX 10,000 in the context of problems that content providers have dealing with lots of servers and lots of customers that they are serving content up to. One aspect of the 10,000 that we haven't talked about yet is actually not the hardware, but the software. Now, when most network engineers think of software architecture, they're probably thinking of loading an image onto a switch and booting it and then shuttering when they think about upgrading, you know, and these sorts of things, kind of that monolithic model, which Juniper's kind of been away from for a while now. And Doug, you want to talk about the software architecture of the QFX 10,000?
Yeah, so when it comes to the QFX 10,000, obviously there's a hardware component, and you can actually kind of say there's a control board that's typically reserved for the control plane, and it's really, really beefy. It looks like a modern server. We use the latest Xeon processors, DDR memory, SSD hard drives, and we treat this just like a server. And when you first boot up the QFX 10,000, it boots right into Yocto Linux. So it's hardened, it's carrier class, and we treat it just like a server. So you get all the benefits of Linux in terms of programmability, extending it, so on and so forth. And what we do is we basically virtualize our network operating system called Junos into a VM, and we use KVM to do that. And that also gives us the ability to do ISSU, because now we encapsulate our network operating system as a VM, and obviously we can have multiple VMs, you know, an active and a backup. Now, the next piece on the software side is, yes, we virtualize our networking operating system. Yes, we're based on Linux. And we've actually started to pull a lot of the non-essential functionality out of Junos. And what I mean by that is that we want Junos to care a lot about BGP, OSPF, and this fundamental networking elements. But when it comes to programmability, APIs, and analytics, we want to take that out of Junos and put that directly into Linux. And the reason behind that is that we want to basically to leverage the foundation of Yocto Linux, and we also want to be able to package these things up into RPMs. So now you can treat your entire switch as a server. So when you start taking a look at tools like Chef and Puppet, you can now upgrade any portion of your switch using simple RPMs. So for example, if you want to upgrade Junos, that's now a separate RPM. Well, if you want a new version of your API so you can do different programming, that's a different RPM that's completely independent of your networking operating system. So from a software point of view, we've really partitioned out the functionality, so there's no fate sharing. So it comes in handy in terms of operations. And again, just some of the benefits of virtualization is it allows you to do ISSU in a single form factor, such as the smaller QFX 10,000, where there's no redundant route engines, for example. So we can do that virtually with different VMs.
Yeah, so ISSU in-service software upgrade, I can upgrade the standby, make it active, and then upgrade the other one. And it's all a stateful failover, if you will, between one and the other, so that I, in theory, I have no packet forwarding interruption during that process.
Yeah, and we use the exact same process, you know, as we do in the Juniper MX, but it does it more of on a hardware basis where there's two routing engines, two physical routing engines. So now we have two virtual routing engines in the QFX 10,000. It's the same protocols. It's nonstop routing. It's nonstop bridging. It's the graceful routing switchover. So same protocols, just in a virtual form factor.
That makes sense, really, because the thing you do much more often is upgrade the code. Hardware failures are rare. You don't need redundant processing engines or management engines. It's really about upgrading the code and being able to swap the code around. So that's a very practical way of getting solving a real problem without loading it with cost.
Right. And one of the funny benefits is, you know, once we remove some of the non-essential functionality from Junos, the side effect is that the image gets smaller. So typically, your image is going to be around 300 to 400 megs. Mm. And now we've shrank that down to under 100 megs. And some cases, we can get down below 50 megs for Junos nowadays. And now, it's just so easy to upgrade Junos on the QFX 10,000. And you can do so through Chef and Puppet with RPMs. The other piece I wanted to point out, because we stripped away some of the non-essential functionality out of Juno, such as automation. So we put that as a separate process on top of Linux, and we've based this on something called Apache Thrift. So now, let's say you want to make a change to the control plane, such as modify a next hop, or you may want to make a data plane change, such as change the number of ECMPs or something like that, or even a next hop change. You can do so through this API based on Apache Thrift. And the benefit is that, you know, whether you like Python or if you prefer Go or even C, you can do so through Apache Thrift, and it normalizes the API. So you can always use your favorite programming language.
The other way to think about also is that, you know, it's a platform for innovation. What we are saying, or what Doug is saying, is basically, you know, initially, whatever you did to affect the forwarding in the network, you know, you did those changes through Juno's features. At the end of the day, any feature that you utilize, whether it's a routing protocol or filter change or whatever have you, impact how the system behaves. And what we're doing is we are giving people more options through JunoS and through this Apache Thrift API, where they can write their own software on top of these platforms and do whatever they want, whether it's route changes or filter adds and things like that. So it's much more open, much more programmable system than what people have been able to do in the past with Juniper systems.
Well, we've talked through a couple of use cases and got to really dive into the QFX 10,000 architecture a bit, which made me happy because I'd done a lot of homework on it, and I think it's a really interesting platform. So we started off the show getting through enterprise customers, large enterprise, and talked a bit about content providers and their need for scale and what the QFX 10,000 brings in that context. There was a final use case I know you guys had wanted to mention, which were some of the needs of web or SaaS providers. Doug, did you want to talk about, from the Juniper perspective, what needs to be addressed these days?
What happens when you take a look at these use cases, the enterprise, the cloud, and web companies, it's almost like a Venn diagram. You'll see overlapping requirements in some areas. And what happens specifically around web is that they have a lot of requirements around scale, and they have a lot of requirements around automation specifically. And we spend a lot of time on the scale in terms of the logical scale, the physical scale. We also spend a lot of time on the automation piece. And that pretty much meets most of the requirements when it comes to the web and the SaaS type companies. So it kind of goes back to our overall data center strategy from Juniper's perspective is whether you're enterprise, cloud provider, or a web slash SaaS provider, we have the same tools available as the QFX 10,000 in the spine and the QFX 5,000 as the leaf. And we have the right software functionality and scale to meet all three of these use cases.
Makes sense. Yeah. So in other words, we don't need to park on this use case for a long time because, as you said, Venn diagram and lots of overlap. This 5,000, 10,000 leaf spine architecture, plus all of the automation tools that go along with it, map to a lot of different needs.
Right. And I guess the last thing I would point out on the website is that with the introduction of 25 gig on the access layer, it's going to put a lot of pressure to go towards 100 gig in the spine. And one feature I want to point out on the QFX 10,000 is that we basically use a form factor called QSFP28, and it's basically a tri-speed port where we could do 10 gig, and it does a native 40 gig, or you could upgrade that to 100 gig as well using the same port. So you can kind of call it a tri-speed port. So 10, 40, and 100 gig built into the line cards and the smaller QFX switches as well, the QFX 10,000 switches.
Very good. Well, that's a good place for us to end the show today. And we want to thank Juniper once again for sponsoring the Packet Pushers. And Doug, starting with you, how can folks follow you on the internet?
Mainly on Twitter is fine. And my handle is Douglas Hanks Jr.
Doug Hanks Jr. And Salman, same question. How can folks follow you on the internet?
Thanks, Ethan. Thanks, Greg, for the show. They can follow me on Twitter also, SalmanInSF.
And if folks, do you guys have a landing page on juniper.net for the QFX line, something like that?
We definitely do for all products. And you can just click on switching, and that will take you to the right area.
Got it. Okay, Mr. Farrow, you were sort of quiet this show. What are you up to this week?
You were doing such a fantastic job. Where would I? Where, there was nowhere for me to jump in.
I'm just full of myself today, I guess.
Well, you need to. I mean, however, I did make some notes as we went through of some things. First of all, and I made a bit of noise about this 15 minutes ago about, you know, design choices. You don't have to make any choices before you buy the product. You can make them after. There's good and bad in that. In a legacy enterprise data center, you might have a bunch of stuff that you have to interoperate with. But particularly things that I learned today, which I wasn't particularly familiar with, was this Fusion 802.1BR type idea, you know, where you can have 1 gigs even though the switch is all 10 gig, but it doesn't cost a lot. You don't have to go and get a lot of money out there for that, which is great. And the other one was the depth of features. So, you know, EVPN, VXLAN, you know, all the overlays in the one chassis. That, I mean, there's software features or software hardware features. But the flexibility of the platform is that the hardware features are quite astonishing. Like, we're talking about performance. You know, we talked about scale, 480, 100-gig ports, 576, 10-gig ports. I'm sure that cabling those will be a bit of a challenge, but that's very interesting. And the flexibility, the fact that there's Linux underneath that, which means, you know, we've talked about this a lot of the times, is that having Linux on the switch is really important for the people who develop DevOps because the network doesn't get as much configuration time as other things. So if I can use my Linux tools to configure my switching, then that's better overall than it is to try and make the DevOps people use networking stuff. That's not working. Nobody in DevOps really wants to waste time on the network because it's very so far away from what they do. So that Linux with Junos running in KVM, which then gives you the ISSU, I really like that about the whole thing. So they're just some things that I sort of drew out of the conversation today.
Well, that specific thing that you just mentioned stuck out to me as well, the fact that the APIs, if you want to upgrade the component that gives you the API, that's a separate thing from Junos now. And so you can do those independently, make your DevOps people happy, give them an upgraded or different set of APIs that let them accomplish what they need to, and you didn't have to interrupt Junos and the control plane there to do that, which I thought that was pretty cool because in my mind they had always been kind of one and the same thing.
And one last thing, I noticed that on Amazon you can buy a book on this switch. So Doug Hanks has written an entire book on this. Doug?
Yes, it's still in progress, and O'Reilly and Amazon love to put pre-orders out there.
Okay.
So I think that you can expect to see this new book on the QFX 10,000 sometime towards the end of this year or early next year, January.
Okay, and that's probably around about a buying cycle. So, and I've read your books before on the QFX 5000 series and so on. they're well worth getting a hold of if you want to learn more about what's going on inside.
Yeah, the 5100 book of yours, Doug, is on my shelf, and I've read through much of it at this point, kind of in bits and pieces, because it's not just a book about that switch. It's a book about data center design and architecture, so it's really a great reference.
Thank you.
Well, okay, that is it for the show this week, and thanks for listening to Packet Pushers. We should be back again in a week or so make sure you come back. And I want to thank Juniper Networks one more time for joining us this week and sponsoring the show. We'd love to hear your feedback about the show, so if you would, send an email to packetpushers@gmail.com and let us know what you're thinking. Alternatively, you can check out the podcast website, which is packetpushers.net, and comment on today's show, or if you like, follow us on Twitter, @packetpushers. Last but not least, remember that too much networking would never be enough.